Revelation chapter 6. Now I watched when the Lamb opened one of the seven seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures say, with a voice like thunder, "Come." And I looked, and behold, a white horse. And its rider had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he came out, conquering and to conquer. When he opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature say, "Come." And out came another horse, bright red. Its rider was permitted to take peace from the earth, so that people should slay one another, and he was given a great sword. When he opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, "Come." And I looked, and behold, a black horse, and its rider had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard what seemed to be a voice in the midst of the four living creatures, saying, "A quart of wheat for a denarius, and three quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil and wine." When he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature say, "Come." And I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and its rider's name was Death, and Hades followed him. And they were given authority over a fourth of the earth, to kill with sword, and with famine, and with pestilence, and by wild beasts of the earth. When he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God, and for the witness they had borne. They cried out with a loud voice, "O sovereign Lord, holy and true, how long before you will judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth?" Then they were each given a white robe and told to rest a little longer, until the number of their fellow servants and their brothers should be complete, who were to be killed as they themselves had been. When he opened the sixth seal, I looked, and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became as black as a sackcloth, the full moon became like blood, and the stars of the sky fell to the earth, as the fig tree sheds its winter fruit when shaken by a gale. The sky vanished like a scroll that is being rolled up, and every mountain and island was removed from its place. Then the kings of the earth, and the great ones, and the generals, and the rich, and the powerful, and everyone, slave and free, hid themselves in the caves and among the rocks of the mountains, calling to the mountains and the rocks, "Fall on us and hide us from the face of him who is seated on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of their wrath has come, and who can stand?" Chapter 7. After this, I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding back the four winds of the earth, that no wind might blow on earth or sea or against any tree. Then I saw another angel ascending from the rising of the sun with the seal of the living God. And he called with a loud voice to the four angels who had been given power to harm earth and sea, saying, "Do not harm the earth or the sea or the trees until we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads."
Thanks for reading, Rachel. Good to see you, and good to see all of you. Thanks for joining us today. I hope you are doing okay, getting the support that you need through these ongoing challenges. Let's keep reaching out for help where we need it and offering help where we can as well. One of my favorite people to quote is Corrie ten Boom, Holocaust survivor. She was accidentally released from her prison in a clerical error just 1 week before all the women her age were sent to the gas chambers. And I recently came across this that Corrie ten Boom said later in her life. She's very quotable even before memes were invented. She said, "If you look at the world, you'll be distressed. If you look within, you'll be depressed. If you look to God, you will be at rest." Carry some weight from the lips of a concentration camp survivor, doesn't it? And it could be a snappy way of summarizing the book of Revelation so far. Remember, this was written into the circumstances of real first century churches. And as they looked at the world around them, they saw Rome full of dominance and danger. As they looked inwards to themselves, they saw fear, temptation to compromise, fading passion, some of them. Revelation was a gift from Jesus, a vision from the Lord to keep them looking to him. And remember, whoever has an ear, let them hear what the Spirit says to the churches. So here is a gift from God to his people in every age. And don't we need this vision? Distressed, certainly, as we look out there. Depressed often as we look into ourselves. Rest, confidence, endurance flow as we focus upwards on the Lord. And the last couple of chapters, Revelation 4 and 5, have wonderfully helped us to do that. We saw that there is a higher throne than the world's throne, that there is a Lamb who was slain, that he is worthy of all worship. And yet, 6 verse 10 in today's reading names the elephant in the room. They cried out with a loud voice, "O sovereign Lord, holy and true, how long?" That question we continue to groan with. But it's not the question of the atheist who believes that we're all just dancing to the tune of DNA. And how long is not the question of the agnostic who has no particular reason to think the world would be other than random and disappointing, even if there is something out there. Now, how long is the question of people who know he is the sovereign Lord? So if there is a throne up there in heaven, we ask, how long will the evil one be able to run riot down here? And he is worshipped in that heaven as holy and true, but how long until his holy justice is done on the earth? Well, in today's passage, heaven speaks to the turmoil of the world that we know. It paints a picture. This one's a Picasso. It's called Guernica. It's regarded as one of the most powerful pieces of anti-war art ever produced, painted in the context of the Spanish Civil War. Now, it's clearly not a chronological narrative of that conflict. It's a picture designed to evoke thoughts and feelings, and much of Revelation is presented in that way. Now, the challenge with the Picasso is there any controlling steer on how you interpret the bull or the horse? And that's why in Revelation, we need to both gaze at the pictures and listen up to the words that accompany them. So, end of chapter 6 tells us very clearly that we're exploring the events around the great day of God's wrath. So then, as the Lamb opens the scroll at the beginning of chapter 6, what we see is him unfolding history running into and then out of that great day of wrath. First, picture a world in chaos. The first four seals of the scroll are open to reveal the horrors of life as we know it. Four horsemen gallop round the globe, wreaking havoc. Verse 2, "And I looked, and behold, a white horse, and its rider had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he came out conquering and to conquer." The conquest of nations there in verse 2. We see in verse 4, a horse rider bringing unrest on the earth. The third holds scales representing economic hardship, charged a day's wages for the most basic provision. And then that fourth horse, death on the rampage. Here is a picture of the world before Judgment Day. And God's people are not immune. That's clear as the fifth seal is opened. They have their own specific category, in fact, of the chaos in the mix. The martyrs, those slain for the word of God. You know, open doors tell us that before you go to bed tonight, at least 10 more people will have been killed somewhere in the world. It adds up to a plane crash every week of people killed as Christians for being Christian. And the point here is not to use those details to help you play end times bingo, though the price of a coffee in central London feels like it is a day's wage. We must be living in the last times. But no, the point is not coronavirus infections reach a certain peak tick in the same week as rioters storm the Capitol building tick. The end must be coming tomorrow. And the horsemen describe the world running up towards the day of wrath, where all through history, conquest and unrest and injustice and death and martyrdom ride forth to pummel creation in the first century and the 21st and everyone in between. We've lived a very charmed life if we think that civilizations progress in restraining these beasts. And it may feel like we restrain one for a short time, so if we hold on to that conqueror, maybe a few less wars in this particular year, but plague and pestilence running riot over there at the same time, and the conquest horse will let loose again eventually. Notice, though, that these terrible intruders only operate under permission. Terrible permissions. But it's not that as the Lamb unseals the scrolls, he's opening Pandora's box. He is in control of the chaos. So the rider permitted to remove peace, just as much as the Lord allows him to. Death, COVID, given precisely the potency he permits them. Which is what begs the martyr's question. If he is the sovereign Lord, how long? They want to see justice done. How long then? Verse 11. Until the number of their fellow servants and their brothers should be complete, who were to be killed as they themselves had been. There's a both and in the original here. Justice won't be done until God has finished adding to the number of his servants generally, and until the number of future martyrs particularly is complete. Now, that is not an easy answer to the question of how long. But it points to a God who is not only growing his kingdom through the suffering, he is actually specifically using the sufferings of his own people to bring about that kingdom growth. Surprise, surprise. Remember the lamb slain in fulfillment of his missional purpose? And again, this has been the story of history. Persecution rife, these horrible horsemen rampaging, and at the same time, the gospel advancing unstoppably through the empires and the ages of the world. Don't be afraid if you're in Smyrna or North Korea or just living in a hostile city. Don't fear. Not because the worst won't happen. Terrible things certainly will under his permission. But under his permission and for his purposes. And with a very specific end point. See, the sixth seal tells us that the end is coming. And so picture the day of his wrath. The day when God says, enough's enough. Verse 13. The stars of the sky fell to the earth as the fig tree sheds its winter fruit when shaken by a gale. Imagine like a little tomato plant and you shake it and its little fruits fall off. Just as easily as that, God shakes the skies and the stars fall. It's a dramatic picture of the end of this entire cosmos. Notice this broken world ending as it began with people hiding from God. Remember Adam and Eve? Verse 15. Then the kings of the earth and the great ones and the generals and the rich and the powerful and everyone, slave and free, hid themselves in the caves. So you were the emperor of Rome. They called you Lord, did they? Well, you'll be hiding in the hills with all of the other presidents and billionaires and normal people. See, a world in chaos is terrifying. Terrifying apocalyptic language here of the sea and the stars and the sky. But there's something more terrifying. And that's the wrath of the Lamb on the day of his wrath. It's a weird thought, isn't it? Humanity running in fear of a Lamb, an angry Lamb. Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and wealth and wisdom and might and honor and glory and blessing. But the people of the world hadn't recognized his wisdom or given him the glory. And so at the end of all things, they find themselves wishing that rocks would fall on their heads, because that would be better, because who can stand on that day? You know, some people say, when I meet God, I'll tell him a thing or two. No, you won't. All presumption and all arrogance and all irreverence will quickly fade as the reality of the judge and his justice confronts humanity. Now, it's very good, isn't it, that the world won't be allowed to go on as it is. And it's very good that there will be justice for the big baddies and abusers of history. But all of us ordinary God ignorers in the queue as well, not deserving to stand on that day either. They say death is the great leveler. That's kind of right. The day of his wrath, more precisely, will be the great leveler. And that should make a difference, for example, to Pergamum Church. Tempted to bow before intimidating Roman emperors and business leaders who seem to hold in their hands whether you earn a living or not. Picture those mighty ones cowering. Do you get the picture in Pergamum? Or London with its influence and its career ladders and its values that if we don't subscribe to will be unfriended and blocked? It can be exhausting to dwell where Satan dwells. But who should really be afraid? And who should really be feeling sorry for who? I'm conscious that these are huge and strange ideas. They raise massive questions. And I want to reassure you, there'll be plenty of time for us to think around these things and to ask. Because what we'll see as we go on in Revelation is not lots of new ideas every week. We'll actually circle round the same big themes introduced here of the way the world is and future judgment and salvation. As we finish today, though, let's answer that question raised at the end of chapter 6. Who can stand? Let's finish by picturing God's people secure. That's what chapter 7 is a picture of. Wrath is coming. But before that, there will be this time of great sealing. Verse 3. Do not harm the earth or the sea or the trees until we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads. Now, again, Revelation, that isn't literal. No need to go and grab the fluorescent lamp to see if it shows whether you've got the sign on your forehead or not. The point is that God will mark out his people as he marked them out to pass over them at the time of judgment in the Exodus. the many Old Testament allusions here, not least us being the complete tribes of Israel, little details like the palm branches, all a reminder that we are part of a family heritage where the living God protects his own. But not his own as if they're some small ethnic clique. Verse 9, look what John sees, and you maybe want to close your eyes as you picture this one. After this I looked, and behold, a great multitude that no one could number, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes, with palm branches in their hands. See, this can be your destiny rather than the judgment. Can you see yourself in the crowd there? It will be full and diverse and exciting, and in among all the diversity, these different languages will unite in one chorus, verse 10, as they say together, salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. Remember, God was working, we saw, in the chaos and the martyrdoms, specifically to increase the number of his servants. This great multitude gathered is what it's all been for. And as we go on in chapter 7, it's clear that we're back in that throne room from chapter 4 and 5. But the difference this time, us specifically, clearly delivered in safety to that place of great glory. And it's not well done us for being the ones who did choose to bless and honour him. Verse 14, these are the ones coming out of the great tribulation. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. If you're smug or self-sufficient in Laodicea or London, remember the blood of that Lamb is the only reason you can stand. Be very relieved about that blood. And enjoy picturing your future. Verse 15, they are before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple. And he who sits on the throne will shelter them with his presence. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more. The sun shall not strike them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb in the midst of the throne will be their shepherd. And he will guide them to springs of living water. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Not hiding from him, hiding in him. No viruses to strike you down. No anxieties about how you'll be provided for. No isolation. Shepherded forever. And every tear wiped away. I love that detail at the end there. I love that that tells us this isn't just a big sweeping picture of the history of the world. It's about our individual lives. Because we'll all show up with scars and frustrations and unanswered questions and tears. You can't live through the Revelation chapter 6 world without accumulating your share. But God will come round personally. I love that he doesn't delegate this job to anyone else. And he will wipe away every tear from our eyes. If you look at the world, you'll be distressed. If you look within, you'll be depressed. If you look to God, you will be at rest. And it kind of puts it all in perspective, doesn't it? All that we're going through at the moment. When we look at him and what he's doing, makes me want to keep going. So are you afraid today? Well, hold on. He has purposes in the pain and there'll be an end to it. Are you tempted to go with the world's flow? Don't. Judgment will be terrible. Are you bored of Jesus? Well, wake up to the joy of what he died to save you from, and the utterly new normal that he longs to take you into if only you'll be humble enough to ask him for help. Are you crying today? Picture every tear gone forever.